Hello and welcome to the Brothers Geek Podcast. My name is Patrick Schmaltz with my two brothers, Christopher Schmaltz. Hello, Christopher.
Hey.
And my other brother, Andrew. Hello, Andrew.
Good evening.
What was that, Andrew?
You're cutting in and out, buddy.
Cutting in and out?
Not a good start.
Is that better?
Fix your microphone, please.
My microphone is fixed.
You are a pro podcaster. Do it right.
We don't get paid for this.
Hi.
Pro level podcaster.
100%.
Pro level, unpaid pro level podcasting. You're welcome.
Yeah, exactly.
High ranking amateur.
What? Yeah.
We are Brothers We're Geeks. We talk about geeky things. This is episode number 145. We are going to do another rewatch. We're going to continue our Batman rewatch with The Dark Knight. This is The Dark Knight.
Yes.
If you don't own this, it is on HBO Max right now. It is on Hulu if you have a subscription. So you have a couple options. You could also rent it on Amazon. So
give yourself the gift of watching this and then
watch it
with listening to our commentary after you've watched it clean the first time.
Absolutely should do that.
Yep.
We're gonna not do very much intro, but we're going to press play on go. We've got it paused at 1 second. The brothers are seeing black screens. I'm like a little ahead because HBO Max like to do an ad before this movie started, so I'm a little off and I'm a little
make
worried.
That but money. It's
okay. They gotta make that money because they want you to watch Lovecraft Country for some reason. It looks interesting and creepy, but
I'm gonna watch that for sure.
I will give that a couple episodes to pique my interest.
Couple episodes for Love. This is now an ad for Lovecraft Country
in HBO Max.
High ranking amateur ad, unpaid.
Yeah,
unpaid. I think we're doing this wrong, boys. I think we're doing it
really
wrong.
We are. All right, let's go.
Okay, so. You're going to press play on go. I'm going to count it down from 3, 2, 1, go. All right. Good old Hans Zimmer coming in hot.
Do you guys remember when we first saw this movie together?
Tell me. My memory
I don't
is,
remember.
Is
like
we got free
moment.
Passes from
oh my God, yes,
Comics.
I remember.
And we went to the IMAX in Mesa or something.
Didn't we take Keith, my mentor at my old law firm? Did he go with this?
I don't know. Did he?
Is that the one where he went with us?
I don't know if it was, but I have distinct memory of the three of us seeing this in IMAX.
God, yes.
At a special
sneak
preview. We got the passes from Samurai Comics because we were friendly with the owners back then.
I didn't know what the hell was going on with everything just burning right here. Like, especially when I first saw this, I was like, what?
It's a theme, dude. It's a thematic.
Thematic, yes.
All right. This opening sequence, this 6 minutes, this was a special, like, advanced sneak preview that showed in IMAX only, like, a year before the movie came out. You guys remember that?
Didn't we?
Yeah, I do.
Patrick, you sound really far away, dude.
The sound design is incredible. Pat, talk about the sound design of these opening minutes.
I mean, they're incredible, like you're saying. I don't have much else to say. I think the music is really like telling in these scenes. It's just like everything is like go go go, and it's very like slowly building more and more and more and more. Hans Zimmer knows what's up.
This movie was shot entirely on location in Chicago. No, I mean they built some sets, but every exterior was in Chicago.
It's awesome.
Yep. And this sequence and other parts of the movie were shot entirely on IMAX cameras. It's one of the first feature films, non-documentary feature films that utilized IMAX cameras.
I have some trivia about that I looked up before watching this. There is 37 minutes of IMAX footage in this film. And it's, 2 hours and 33 minutes, so there's different scenes throughout that are
yep.
IMAX.
We'll try to call it out.
Yep.
Yeah. Looks amazing.
There's
looks
iconic
amazing.
Shots that are
iconic
clearly
shots.
IMAX.
You guys are watching this on Blu-ray, right?
Oh, yeah. My special edition Blu-ray.
Me
limited,
too.
Limited edition.
Now you know how jacked up this is. It's just you learn immediately.
What's that? Oh yeah. What are you guys drinking?
Irish whiskey.
I'm drinking a St. Archer Gold. It's a beer.
St. Archer Gold. And you said whiskey, Christopher?
Irish whiskey, yeah. It's called Green Spot.
Green Spot,
yep.
We salute you, listener, if you're listening to this with us.
We salute you.
Ah. You're a little soft on my end. Can you hear him okay, Chris?
He's a little soft. Yep.
Am I a little soft still?
Yep.
You sound a little better now. Are you closer to your mic?
How about now?
You're very far away.
Very far away.
Yeah.
You sound like you're across the room.
How about now?
Better.
Okay, hold on. I can turn.
Okay, as we're watching this bank heist scene, a couple things we got to point out. Just because I think we can't avoid the comparison between Heath Ledger's Joker and Joaquin Phoenix's Joker. Obviously, we don't know yet that the Joker is involved. The actual Joker, the character, is involved in this. Clearly, this bank manager, you know, he's returning fire and trying to kill these guys, so he's not your average bank manager. So that's the first kind of like signal that what they're doing has extra significance. But
now they're just at the mob bank. This is,
it's a mob bank.
Yeah.
So one by one, these guys get knocked off. Mob bank. So one by one, these guys get knocked off. And at the end, when we get to it, you'll see it. But for me, this scene perfectly introduces the Joker not only as completely ruthless in how he planned this out, but a criminal mastermind. Like, he is a criminal mastermind.
And I don't want us to spend a lot of time harking on the Joker movie, the Joaquin Phoenix Joker movie, but this is that's something missing from that. It's like
that's my point.
The Joker is a freaking genius, like, and they paint him as this like psychopath. He's Batman's equal, you know,
as kind of noble and kind of logical and, you know, brilliant as Batman is in his detective work. Joker is just as brilliant as he is ruthless and kind of the
and an anarchist, right? I mean, exactly. It's just he is.
And you will hear us listen to the movie on occasion because it's just so good that we can't
this
not.
Part is amazing. Like, and then the music, like, finally
reveals.
Yeah, exactly. That kept this is a the perfect, Joker's this look. Is a perfect opening sequence to a film, I think. It's just,
it's an amazing. Yeah, it's an amazing introduction of the character, right?
Yep. Yeah. And he plans every step of this robbery out exactly. Every beat,
the timing, all of it.
It's awesome.
It's honestly the most comic booky part of this movie, as realistic as, you know, as hard realism as Nolan tries to go with these movies. The fact that the Joker is able to pull off all of this stuff like he does,
none of that is like Deus Ex, right? All of envision that human beings are doing all of this, and it's totally believable. If
totally
the person is a mastermind, right? Yep.
So here we go, reestablishing all these.
Where
we're at in Gotham.
That guy is in like five movies where he plays a Chicago cop.
100%.
He must just be like a local guy in Chicago that's working.
Seriously,
you know?
He's in like five Chicago cop movies.
Yeah.
That's a completely accurate statement.
Okay. A little trivia for you guys in these fun exposition moments. What year did the first Batman film come out?
Well, I mean, are you counting?
I'm not giving it. That's it.
The Adam West had a feature film. That the Adam West Batman had a feature film. It was 1966, 1967?
That was going to be my guess. 68, maybe?
You're right about the Adam West Batman being 66, but the first Batman film was released in 1943. It's black and white.
Whoa. Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Fun little Batman trivia for you. I'll sprinkle those throughout.
I love it.
Oh, fun little Batman trivia about this. Cillian Murphy, the only Batman villain to be in more than one Batman film.
Interesting.
That is good trivia. Cillian Murphy, of course, part of the Christopher Nolan company of players. He appears in like every Chris Nolan movie.
Oh yeah. Once you find an actor that you like, you just you know,
keep going to him.
Well, that's the thing that people don't realize about movie making is it's a job. And if you are able to hire whoever you want to be your coworker, why wouldn't you hire your friend that you enjoy working with? You know?
I completely understand that. Oh, hey, look, it's the Tumblr.
Hey, look, the Tumblr. Oh, here. I love it.
Loiter.
That's great.
I think I'm a little ahead, so I'm gonna hold off on my reveals.
Batman does not use guns.
Nope.
Well, now you're talking about some of the problems with the Batman in the Zack Snyder movies is the Batmobile has guns. The Batmobile has guns in this, too. It's just sort of... He doesn't use a firearm.
Handgun, yeah.
He doesn't use a handgun. And, yeah. I mean, in the Tim Burton Batman films, there's... What do they call it? What are there's miniguns, Vulcan cannons on the Batwing. And there's machine guns. There's 50 cal machine guns on the Batmobile.
Those movies are pretty campy, but...
pretty campy. They're outrageous.
They're outrageously campy.
I love that Batplane. I think it's fun.
The Batwing? Oh, yeah. The Batwing from the 1989 Batman is great.
Yeah. Good old Cillian Murphy. He arrests the guys with the mask just the same as the guys next to the criminals.
Voice used to perfection.
Batman voice. I'm not wearing hockey pads. I love it.
Yep.
He left off the dipshit.
Yep. Yeah. I'm not wearing hockey pads. You fuck up.
Cleaned out.
I love it when Batman just appears. It's just like, I'm here now. I remember this movie came out in 2008, and I can remember how closely guarded, you know, 2008, the internet and all that stuff, how, you know, really kind of all the fan sites and all those things that existed at the time. What the Joker's look for this movie was one of like these closely guarded secrets.
Yeah, and I remember that.
Really?
And they would like slowly trickle out like images, like reflections of him and him behind like a window pane, like obstructed and stuff like that, just because they were waiting to do like the big reveal of what Heath Ledger's Joker really looked like.
Creative idea.
He died before this was released, right? I'm trying to remember.
This movie was released in July of 2008, and I think he died in like February or March. I'm gonna Google that, make sure, because we gotta pay that proper respect.
Yeah, because he's awesome.
He is. I saw Michael Caine's great. I love the establishing nature of how we follow Alfred into this bunker.
Mm-hmm.
I love that, you know, it's not like he comes down the thing and we're already in there. Like, we follow him through it and like establishing the space through him, like as him as our like entry point. I really like that.
Well, I like that, from story position, they burnt down the, you know, Wayne Manor, and they're living out of a bunker.
And he's rebuilding it, right? He's rebuilding it right now?
Yeah. This takes place, this movie, according to the trivia, this movie takes place 9 months after the events of Batman Begins. So, it's been less than
a year. And
that
makes sense, because they teed up the Joker at the very end of the last movie. We commented on it, so it should be soon thereafter.
He, like, appears at the, you know, his first appearance is, like, behind the scenes of Batman Begins. Yeah, so I googled it. Heath Ledger died on January 22nd, 2008.
So, Heath Ledger. You're talking about Heath Ledger. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Heath Ledger died January 22nd, 2008, and this movie was released July of 2008, so 6 months.
Crazy. I love that little nod to Christian Bale's back being all scarred up and bruised, because there's this really interesting cover. I think it's Alex Ross that did it like years ago.
You're right. I was having the same thought, Patrick.
What's that?
I was having the same thought. You're right. It's Alex Ross.
It's Alex Ross did the cover of like this Batman and Bruce Wayne, and he just like is looking over his shoulder, and he see that Batman's back is like destroyed and cut up, and he, of course he'd be like that. Of course he'd be scarred up. You know, he's a human being who's been doing this for years.
Aaron Eckhart as Harvey Dent, the new district attorney in Gotham, the anti-crime crusader.
And every Batman nerd goes, oh!
Yep.
Immediately when he walks in and he flips a coin.
Yep.
They're teeing up Two-Face. Yep.
Yep, they know it's coming. Maggie Gyllenhaal replacing Katie Holmes as Rachel for this movie?
True or false, the character of Rachel Dawes appears in the Batman comics.
Honestly, true.
False.
Wow.
False.
She's a creation for the movie?
She's a creation for the movie. She is made up.
Interesting. Well, I would not have guessed that. Because I clearly didn't.
It's, I mean, this movie kind of builds slowly and surely with, you know, what's going on in Gotham, Batman shaking things up.
It's a lot of, it's a three-tiered or three vertices of a triangle, right? They're establishing the character of the three main players and their characteristics. It's Harvey Dent, who is a brash, aggressive, very capable law enforcement crusader type. There's Batman, mature in his vigilanteism and his approach to, you know, that was the whole point of the back shot, right? Which is he's been through the ringer doing his thing.
Yep.
And then Joker is Joker, brilliant anarchist. And so that is the establishing. All three of these segments are all about establishing the people. That'll be the centerpieces of the rest of the movie.
If we were to do a D&D like Venn diagram of these three characters, Harvey Dent would be lawful good? Or I'm not sure.
Lawful.
Batman is lawful neutral because he's committing a crime. Or no, he'd be neutral good. because he's committing a crime, but for the benefit of others.
Yeah, neutral good.
Neutral good.
Harvey is not lawful neutral, I think.
Lawful neutral.
He's not Mr. Goody Two Shoes. He's willing to sort of get his hands dirty a little bit.
Well, and you see that later in this film, too.
He's squeaky clean, but he's still willing to work with the Batman. I mean, Batman works outside the law.
And that's why I think he's in lawful neutral.
Yeah, that's a good call. That's a good call.
And Joker is... I don't know if he's chaotic evil.
I mean...
Chaotic neutral? Chaotic evil
seems right for the Joker.
Yeah, that's probably right.
Good old nerdy moment. It's fun to figure out D&D alignments for film characters. I like to do that anyway.
Some pissant that's on screen with the great Morgan Freeman. There was all these theories that were flying around the internet that this guy would eventually turn into the Riddler. He was the beginnings of that character that may evolve in the third movie.
I like that idea.
I would like to see, I mean, we saw Jim Carrey as kind of a manic version of him playing Jim, doing Jim Carrey's version of the Riddler. I would really like to do the Riddler as the genius game master Riddler that we saw kind of in the Dark Knight or the Batman animated series.
A-list foes of Batman are all incredibly smart, right? And they have to be. I mean, that plays into sort of the main point of Batman.
Well, and the interesting part
he's the Sherlock Holmes of his day.
Yeah. Well, and the Joker and the Riddler are not physically, able to match up to Batman. They are manipulating him through their minds, through games, through holding Gotham ransom, stuff like that. It's more about he has to figure it out and find them.
What restaurant is this, Andrew? Did you ever look that up?
I don't think I ever looked it up. I don't know if they... Let me see if it's on...
Maybe we should look that up.
Yeah,
I'd be curious about that. If that's a restaurant in Chicago, because that's a cool space.
Dark Knight Restaurant. Scene, location.
Okay. The following exclamations were not used in the 1968 Batman. Which one was not? Holy aioli. Holy, holy popsicle. Holy, holy Hitler. The only one that wasn't used was holy popsicle.
What?
Batman. Holy popsicle, Batman. Hey, holy
central moment, central theme of the theories of this movie, the philosophy of this movie.
Oh, this kind of goes to your point about being neutral, because he talks about being the villain, so he could be lawful evil. He becomes lawful evil in the end, which is crazy. Spoilers if you haven't seen Dark Knight. What are you doing here if you haven't watched Dark Knight?
They did shoot some in London. I'm looking at movielocations.com, and I was incorrect. They do not entirely shoot... The whole entire movie is not entirely shot in Chicago. The vast majority is shot in Chicago. There are three London locations listed.
London?
London. And one of the London locations was that restaurant scene, the Criterion restaurant in Piccadilly.
We gotta go there.
I mean, if we ever make it to London...
Added to our London brothers go to London trip.
Absolutely, I'd be down with that.
To watch football.
Yes, sir. I'd love for that to happen. That'd be great.
soon that's going to happen. But soon. Someday. Someday it will.
Someday. Life keeps getting in the way. And, you know, pandemics.
And, you know, pandemics. No big deal.
I love the, you know, huge square tube television.
Yeah, what year is this?
2008.
Oh, my
tube
God.
Tube television.
Flat screens were absolutely not the norm in 2008. They were still, like, new tech. If you think about it, I don't think... Yeah,
amazing we put up with that shit.
Well, seriously. Nobody has, like, an iPhone in these movies yet. It's, like, that's still kind of new.
Oh.
Here we go. Heath Ledger's Joker in all his glory. The magic trick!
Oh, my God, the magic trick is amazing.
How about a magic trick?
When I first saw this, I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's such an oh, my God moment.
The theater laughed.
Oh, shit. Yep. I'll admit, when I heard that Heath Ledger was being cast as Joker, I didn't get it.
I had the same reaction.
I did not get it. I'm like, the kid from 10 Things I Hate About You, the hero from A Knight's Tale, I don't see it. I just don't.
God, that's another movie that I love is A Knight's Tale. It's not great, but it's so fun to watch.
So fun to watch.
I wonder if Hannah's watched A Knight's Tale. I got to add that to the list.
Ashton and I watched that recently. You probably watched it a month or two ago. That's such a fun movie.
It's just fun. I mean, what got him this role? What did he do that was like so...
Well, what had he done before this movie? He had done 10 Things I Hate About You. He had done a short-lived like fantasy TV series. He had done... did he do... Yeah, of course he did, because this is like his last full role. He had done the Patriot with Mel Gibson.
Oh, yeah.
What else? I'm going to look that up. I want to know his history before this movie.
Okay, I'm beat you to it.
If you're good at something, never do it for free.
100% words I live by.
The movie he did right before this is I'm Not Here, that movie about Bob Dylan.
He did Brokeback Mountain.
Oh, my God. That's what got him this movie. Everybody, yep. I think he won an Academy Award for that.
I don't think he won. He was nominated. Let's he won an Academy Award for the Joker.
He did.
And we've debated whether or not, do we think he still would have won if he hadn't died?
I mean,
it's an all-time great performance. There's no doubt about that.
He's amazing. So if he had not died, I don't want to argue that point because I think he deserves it. But I think that it definitely like took him to the top. You know, it's incredible.
Just in that few minutes scene, you learn so much about what he's capable of, and it's great. Yep. I saw this movie. We went and saw this movie, the three of us together.
Yep.
In a sneak preview. And then I went with Daniel on opening night. He called me up. He's like, hey, you want to go to the movie? I'm like, sure. And I think I went and saw it again that same weekend. I think I saw this movie 3 times in 7 days.
There's no question I saw it again that weekend after the sneak preview. Because I went with my kids.
Yeah. I mean, this movie came out 12 years ago, so Katarina would have been in junior high.
Uh-huh.
Did you take Katarina to this movie?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Lucius Fox wearing a bow tie, rocking the bow tie. Morgan Freeman.
Playing it.
Crushing the bow tie game. Was last, Chris, have you worn a bow tie to the office lately?
I have, 3-4 weeks ago.
Nice.
Not a whole lot of tie game happening these days, but I wore a bow tie, last month.
Sure, it probably gets a nice reaction on the Zoom meetings, though, when you show up in a bow tie.
It does. People love it. I have a good collection of bow ties. So.
You do. That is legit. How many bow ties do you think you got, Christopher, top to bottom?
30-plus.
30-plus bow ties. Patrick, how many bow ties you got?
Oh, probably less than 20. I would say more than 10, less than 20.
Okay. I love the new Batman armor for the simple reason that it reminds me of plate armor that a knight would wear.
So a little trivia about this armor. It was the whole scene was rewritten because Christopher Nolan wanted to redesign the Batman suit because Christian Bale found it very uncomfortable, the original Batman suit. So they rewrote it into the script to be this whole scene about him redesigning
a different suit.
Different suit.
No kidding.
Yeah, they rewrote it because Christian Bale found it the old one to be very cumbersome, like painful to wear.
Well, they even put the joke in, and you can tell if you pay attention to it. How the Batman cowl is designed in the first movie, he can't turn his head.
Yeah.
Like, he's constantly, like, turning his entire upper body to look around. But obviously they redesigned this bat suit. They, you know, it's like a mesh covering. He has a helmet, but he's able to move his head independently so he can actually, like, move around.
So it just happened a second ago too. Since we're talking about the suit, the blades fly out of Batman's what do you call that? Christopher, what's a knight's gauntlet? It's not quite a gauntlet.
Bracer. Yeah.
Bracer. Thank you.
Bracer.
Andrew.
Yeah.
The thing that covers the forearm is the bracer.
Batman. This is the only Batman film. Batman never uses a batarang. That's
interesting.
The That kind of counts as a batarang, though. That's a little bit.
What do you think about this guy's tie game? That knot is kind of excessive.
I mean, that's a nice suit.
Oh, no, it's a great suit. The first of Heath Ledger's incredible How I Got My Scars speeches.
Yeah, it's a running theme.
It's a running theme, and I mean, we're going to sing this movie's praises.
Because it's
such a fantastic film. But I love the idea that this Joker does not have an origin story.
I was just going to say that, so I'm glad you got
that. He just appears as this menacing thing.
Yeah.
And it makes him more scary. Right. Like, how does somebody turn into somebody like this? You fill in the blanks, and anything you can come up with is scary and terrible.
So, why so serious is part of the marketing campaign for this?
Oh, yeah, that was on every single... On every single movie poster you saw Why So Serious. So the guy just got murked by the knife.
If they were ever going to make a Batman movie rated R, this would be it, right? I mean, there is a Batman v Superman. Thanks. Rated R version.
The Batman version in that movie, it lacks. I mean, it takes some liberties, but I like the Ben Affleck, like, brutal, worn down by violence, all capable of almost anything, ready to cross the line. Batman, 20 years in Gotham.
I like Affleck's portrayal.
So do I.
I don't mind it. You know, that rewatch the Ultimate Edition of Batman v Superman. That's not a
IMAX shot of Shanghai right there.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing.
Beautiful, incredible skyline.
Little fun trivia. This is the only Batman movie that Batman leaves Gotham.
Yep. Suit game in this movie is on point.
The suit game is seriously on point. You know, do they shoot in China because they wanted some of that Chinese film money?
I betcha.
Yeah.
There was probably some Hong Kong venture capital.
Chinese Film Corporation or whatever invested in it. That's a really nice light brown suit. I like it.
Everybody needs a gray suit or a light brown suit.
100%. Yeah. Not an iPhone.
Not an iPhone. Pre-iPhone. Change everything.
It's a very rare man that can pull off a double-breasted suit. Not gonna lie.
Morgan Freeman. He could do whatever he wants.
He could pull off anything, dude. Just look at how he walks through he walks through that sky bridge, and he's just like, he's the pimpinest dude on the sky bridge.
He literally narrated a documentary about penguins, and people saw it and loved it. Like, he can do whatever he wants. I love this shot. This suit is really cool, too. This is the first time we get to see, like, this suit. Just chilling. Batman, chilling on the side of a building.
Either of you afraid of heights?
What's that?
Either of you afraid of heights?
Hell yeah, I am. Fuck this.
Yes, I have my twinges of difficulty.
Would you be able to, like, get up? Would you be able to, like, do you have issues, like, looking down from, you know, higher than eye level? Does it make you uncomfortable?
No.
I mean, I have a fear of falling off things, but I don't, it doesn't make me, like, getting up high doesn't really upset me.
You just talking about it is making me, really over here.
I'm stressed out, yeah. Stressed
That's out. Funny.
Can't handle it.
He's
Can't
on the edge it. Of a, he's on the edge of a very tall building. I don't like it.
Yep. So this scene really is, I mean, you got six goons just chilling while their boss talks on the phone.
Yep.
Batman decides he's going to just, you know, show up, and he murks everybody. I mean, he doesn't kill anybody, but he takes out this whole crew of thugs. I mean, this is Batman at 100% Batman.
Totally.
Yeah.
No place is inaccessible.
Yep.
He's got tech to solve all those problems.
Yep.
If he wants to get to you, he's going to get to you.
Yep.
Yeah, it's awesome.
This is an IMAX shot, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Dum-dums and their guns.
This movie location, the website, is pretty cool.
Yep. It's just a great set piece.
Incredible set piece. Well, and they give the little snippets. We kind of talked over it, but you see his interactions with Alfred. You see his interactions with Lucius Fox, like, to how he's putting all the pieces together, how he's going to pull all this shit off. And if you have the money, if you have the skill, if you have the contacts, I mean, it's entirely possible.
Totally.
Everything that happens could happen.
maybe some tech that hasn't been invented, but that's comic. That's what comic books are, right?
Exactly.
It seems plausible instead of like,
yeah,
ridiculous. You know,
seems entirely plausible.
Totally.
I think that's part of the difference of why these movies are so good too. Is like they feel grounded in reality, and that's something that the Marvel movies weren't doing yet. And this is like, this year they started to like make their movies more like it's Iron Man.
They went to school. They absolutely went to school on this movie and Nolan's aesthetic and style.
Yes.
And to make it more visceral and real. Well, I just
this movie,
love that.
This movie came out the same year as Iron Man. And we got to point out Maggie Gyllenhaal. She's crushing the suit game too. This vest and slacks look on her.
Awesome.
This is a good look.
I love it.
Crushing it. This movie had the biggest opening weekend of all time when it was released.
So you're talking about money. This is the first comic book movie to reach $1 billion.
Yep.
It was huge. Everybody saw this movie. You goddamn saw it 3 times the first weekend.
First 7 days. I mean, the first time I saw it was a sneak preview on a Tuesday night. But it was opening week.
Yep.
Yeah, I definitely saw this movie 3 times in 7 days. And I got more out of it each time. And then I don't think I watched it again for 6 months. I've said this before. I actually started to get really... I would get sad watching it over the years.
Why?
Because Heath Ledger was dead.
Yeah, that's true.
It made me sad to watch it and think about the fact that we would never see him act again.
Yeah.
It made me sad. So it was hard to watch for a while.
So
this restaurant is Bergdorf's.
What
in Chicago.
That? You it's looked Chicago. That one up too?
Looked it up. I got the filming locations website up. And they say the scene when Maroney is arrested happened at Bergdorf's, and they give the address.
Oh, shit.
The Bergdorf, 17 West Adams Street.
Have you guys ever been to Chicago?
Yes. Just passing through.
I've been there multiple times.
Is it a
great
cool city?
Blues,
or is it...
Great blues bar. Great pizza. Great architecture. It's a great city.
Did you take a river tour?
I did. Architectural river tour.
That's dope.
Cool.
What's the name of the river?
Wow. I should know that. I don't remember.
Oh.
I just remember the architectural docent shit on the Trump Tower.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. That built right on the river.
Fuck
it was
Donald
funny.
Trump. He probably didn't even own that building. He probably just licensed his name.
You're right.
Piece of shit. The mayor with his 3-piece suit just freaking putting it down.
I'm going to get a 3-piece suit, I think, for the wedding.
Nice.
Yeah.
I would love a 3-piece suit.
Yeah, I'm getting.
I've
I'm
never
get
owned
a 3-piece suit.
I'm
going to get
you know,
a new 3-piece suit.
That's an idea.
Mm-hmm.
That yeah, might be good. Something I could treat myself with a new 3-piece suit. What color are you
gonna? I'm gonna get one. I mean, I need one that's like a not completely dark charcoal gray, but it'll be a gray.
Okay, that's not a bad
gray
idea.
3-piece. Yep.
I'm not gonna get the same thing as you, but that's not a bad idea. I don't own a 3-piece suit.
There you go.
I love a waistcoat too. I like the way a waistcoat looks.
Vests are sweet. So
yeah. Yep. Fun fact about this scene. The camcorder footage in the movie.
Uh-huh.
Those scenes were shot and directed by Heath Ledger. Like, Nolan just, like, let him do it.
Wow.
Yeah. It's him actually operating the camera. And it's him kind of, like, making the choices of the shot and what how he's going to interact with his actor.
Because Heath Ledger is amazing.
Yep. What do we think a penthouse apartment runs? This amount of square footage, multiple floors.
In Chicago.
$20 million?
Yes.
Yeah.
25 to 30.
An entire 2008, floor?
Yeah, look 20, at that. 20 million.
You look at that hallway. Like, that's effing huge.
Yep. Well, that's the whole apartment, dude. It's like a, I mean, it's loft style, so it's all
open. Yeah, it's an open plan.
Yep.
With escape rooms and bedrooms and other shit.
Totally customized for your billionaire crime fighter. Totally fitting with the Bruce Wayne, I'm a complete douchebag motif. He arrives on a helicopter to his own damn apartment with models.
All in different colored dresses.
I'm sure they were given instructions that they could not wear similar colors.
Everything was a choice, yeah. He's mocking him.
Well, that's what Rachel thinks, but he believes it.
I mean, he does it now.
You can talk. We talk so much about how good Heath Ledger is, and we'll talk more about Gary Oldman when we see more of him about how good he is as Commissioner Gordon. But Bale's version of Bruce Wayne, his multiple versions of Bruce Wayne, you can see it in this one scene. He is the douchebag version of Bruce Wayne. And through this speech, you see him actually become the real version of Bruce Wayne.
Yep.
The guy who actually does believe in things, who thinks that Harvey can actually...
In that speech, he transforms from douchebag, mocking, like, money guy to, I don't give a shit, to, wow, I really...
One is the affectation that that's the mask that he wears. And then he gradually becomes who he actually is.
I will say this, and like, you know, Christian Bale is definitely the best Batman we've ever had. You know, it's like, he's just such a good actor. He, like, owns the roles. And this is, like, peak Christian Bale. He's in such good shape. And he's, like, right at the peak of his career. Yeah, he's so good. There's a lot of really good actors in this movie.
A good director. You get career-defining performances out of people. More scheming from the Joker. Threatening people. Holding people hostage, just in fear, just the threat of it.
Let's see. What else do I have here?
Yeah, we're watching the movie because we like it so much.
Yeah, it's great.
And then it just... The sequences. He carries out his threats.
Yep. All of these multiple scenes building to something clearly with all the cuts
to
and the editing.
Iconic scene where he shows up. I mean, it's just incredible scene.
Yep. That's a wonderful bit of trivia about when Joker shows up. And we'll get to it when we see it.
The music is perfectly set up to...
So, obviously, Heath Ledger is the best Joker. Who would you guys think is second? Like Jack Nicholson? Or are you guys a fan of the Suicide Squad Jack Nicholson? Like Joker? What's his name?
No. Jack Nicholson is second.
And here we go.
Joaquin Phoenix. Do any of us really like the Joaquin Phoenix? That movie is disturbing, for sure. But he's really good. I don't know. Like, Joaquin Phoenix is a pretty good actor.
Great performance. It just doesn't really speak to me as a Joker. I don't know. It just doesn't work for me on a level of he's portraying the Joker.
This is so like the purest form of Joker.
So Heath Ledger, when he shows up out of the elevator, Michael Caine had actually never seen him in his Joker costume and makeup. And he had given interviews. Apparently there was actually a line that he's supposed to say, but because he was so shocked by what he saw, he didn't say the line.
Wow.
And Heath Ledger kept playing the scene. And that was the take that they used, was the take when Michael Caine was so shocked by what he saw. Senator Patrick Leahy in shot right here with Heath Ledger. He's appeared in every modern Batman film.
What?
Patrick Leahy, yep. Senator from Connecticut, I think, maybe?
Is he in every Batman film?
He's a big Batman fan. He was in all three of these movies, and he was in Batman v Superman.
Hmm.
Let's take a look. Holy Patrick Leahy. Where was he a senator from? Is he still a senator? Vermont. Senator from Vermont.
The menace.
Yep.
It's enhanced by the fact that he's just so... like, appears to be unhinged. He could do anything at any moment. It just ratchets up that tone underlying it is just, it ratchets up the tension like you cannot believe. It's perfect.
Gyllenhaal, like, at the being, like, controlling her fear and not trying to provoke him, but clearly so, like, yeah. Whatever, all the different things she's feeling at once as Rachel. You almost wonder, like, did Heath Ledger, you know, did he make the choice to grab her and, like, she stayed in character? Or was that something that was planned? Because it seems so natural. Like, her fear is so palpable, but she's working so hard to control it. And then Batman appears and beats the shit out of six guys, as Batman does.
Voice support. He just dives. It's pretty incredible. This speech is when I knew this movie was amazing, because it's this interesting idea about a villain who doesn't want anything, and like the idea that Christopher Nolan saw the idea of Joker just being an anarchist, and he just wants to screw with the world and Batman and cause problems. And it's so interesting and so smart. This is so well written. And yeah, I mean, this is what I knew I would. I love this movie, watching this scene.
Also, on some level, the Joker is not understandable.
Yes.
Because you can kind of get your mind around someone. You can start to empathize if you can understand what they need or what they want.
Yeah.
But if he doesn't seem to need or want anything beyond what he wants to do in any given moment, you know, how can you fight something like that?
Right. How do you confront it?
Exactly.
What is the way you confront it? Can't you? The simple answer is you kill it.
Yep.
But Batman isn't about the simple.
Nope.
And it's about humanity, right? It's about, we could all be anarchists.
I love that Batman, like, beat him to it. Start to see people turning on Batman.
Yep, that's the beginning.
Remember how unbelievably fucking loud this scene was in the theater.
I was just thinking that same thing. It was so loud.
It was deafening. And it's louder than my surround sound right now.
Crazy.
I love that Michael Caine even says that what you're thinking is like, I don't think he made it loud enough, sir.
You know, a huge gun going off in an enclosed space. It's going to be louder than shit.
Yes.
And the little pissant starts to figure it out.
It's interesting. I like this idea that, like, that people would start to figure out, you know, who Batman is. Like, just, there would be a record of it. It's like, he found the prototype schematics of the tumbler.
Like, people could figure out if they cared to look.
Yes.
It's almost like people, they're okay with the secret, almost, on some level. They're like, they're okay. You know what? He's doing good, so why are we going to try
to... This is a great sequence.
Yep.
Nice bow tie, by the way.
Yeah, I was just thinking that too.
Killing the bow tie game.
The bow tie game and the sweater vest game. He's the CEO of a multi-billion-dollar corporation, and he's rocking a bow tie and a sweater vest. That was when the pissant knew he had fucked up. Gonna blackmail the Batman, you idiot. Get the fuck out of my office.
Exactly.
Get the fuck out of my office.
Dismissed.
Yep. It's like, we're done here. Michael Hall.
Hey, Michael Hall. Pretty random that he's in this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty cool. This is something else that is totally comics accurate. The Batman does not appear during the day. He is nocturnal.
That's a very good point.
Batman is nocturnal. The Batman 66, the Adam West, the super campy TV series, Batman appears during the day. And it one of those things where it's just like, it doesn't work. Batman is nocturnal.
Doesn't work.
Well, it's also like if people could just see him, then they would know that he's just a man. And part of like Batman is that he's a legend. He's an entity. He's not a human. You know,
humans are naturally afraid of the dark because they can't see in it.
Yes.
So he exists in that place that you're afraid of. It's his place. And so, when we get to the Dark Knight Rises, that'll be directly challenged by Bane.
We talked over the exposition here a little bit. What has led him to this apartment? Like the thumbprint on the bullet casing? This is a little bit...
Four possible addresses.
The four possible matches to the bullet thumbprint with four possible addresses. The address closest to the funeral is the one he goes to.
And...
Because they know that the Joker is threatening the mayor.
And who is this guy?
These guys are the honor guard.
Oh, for the funeral. They've been replaced.
They were replaced by the Joker and his henchmen.
Henchmen.
And it's also perfectly timed.
Everybody said Gordon was dead. I was like, oh my God, they killed Gordon.
Can't believe it.
Yep. Oh my God, they're really going to kill Gordon?
Yeah, it was a shock. Look at him. He doesn't turn.
Nope. You can kind of, you see that really Dent has a dark side. He has that side of him that,
yep,
when he's pushed, he can become capable of anything.
Lawful neutral.
That's what I'm saying. He's committing a crime, but he's doing the things to protect people. You know, it's like the extent of the law.
Yep. The theme for me.
Different kid.
Yep. That's why the theme for me that. So, I mean, on the most famous, I've talked about this before, but the most basic level of fiction, as it was explained to me by one of my college professors, was there's the thing and then there's the other thing. So what's your story about? Oh, it's a story about Batman fighting against the Joker. But what's the other thing that your story's about? The story that you're, the thing that you're trying to illuminate by telling the story about the Batman versus the Joker. And for me, that other thing is humanity's or America's reaction to terrorism. What it makes us capable of, how it pushes our heroes to the limit, how it makes us compromise, the fear that it can inspire in a populace.
And the desperation.
Yeah. What we become capable of when we're faced with the evil of terrorism, which in a lot of ways the Joker represents.
Anarchy and powerlessness. It's like you feeling like the world is out of control, and people react to that in very different ways. They either want more control, and they want the government to do things to right the ship, even if that means taking away some of their freedoms.
Yep.
You know? And that's kind of what this movie is about. Is like,
I think the analogy breaks down though, because the whole setup of the Joker is that he doesn't have a motivation.
Yeah. I mean, he wants to, when we
terrorists do have a motivation though.
I agree.
Or do we like perceive a lack of motivation or no motivation? Is it commenting on that?
Well, we get to the scene in the hospital where he's talking to Harvey after Harvey's been scarred. I mean, that's where we get his confession. And I think that if we really are going to understand the Joker's motivations, that's the scene that will really push it forward.
Yeah, we'll get there, and we can talk about that.
See, Batman, he is torturing this guy to get information.
It threw him off a building.
Exactly. The pain and fear that he wasn't giving him answers, so guess what? He just decides he's going to throw him off a damn building.
Broke his leg.
But what he's saying to Batman right now is he's not going to give up the Joker because he's like, you have rules. I get it. Like the Joker has no rules. He will make me suffer.
Look at this moment here. Dent thinks Gordon's dead. He's got one of Joker's men. He's a lawyer. He is the top lawyer, the top government lawyer. He is the prosecutor in Gotham.
Yep.
And he's threatening this man with a gun.
Leaving his fate. Well, this is it's not true fate because it's heads on both sides, right? So
he has his moral code in this moment, but at the same time, we're looking at this lawyer who exists within the law threatening someone with a gun. Another scene where the Batman just appears.
And he knows more than everyone.
And the Batman's like, I can threaten and intimidate and
not you,
hurt
yeah.
people, but you cannot. For this to work, you have to be above reproach.
Well, it's sort of like Batman started to right the ship of Gotham to get it back to where it should be. There was a corruption, there was like criminals, there was disorder, you know, uneven classism, you know, and Batman is trying to right that ship, and it's Gotham is rejecting it. It's, you know, all the mob bosses are running and scared, and they're fighting for the Batman, and then the Joker is created to counteract this. Society sees Harvey Dent as this beacon of hope, and that wouldn't have existed in a Batman-less world, but Batman is starting to get it back to where it is, but it's not there yet. You know, Gotham is still corrupt. It's still a little, it's still learning where it's at. And then eventually the Dark Knight Rises, you know, it's like,
well,
years of peace, you know,
it's grounded in the theory too, that is referenced, in like the Marvel movies, is that people rise to the challenge. And so if mm-hmm. you've got a mass superhero, the villains will respond, right?
Right.
Yeah, there's...
Well, they bring it up at the end of the first movie is escalation. You wear bulletproof vests, they carry armor piercing rounds.
Yep.
You know, it's sort of like that's the idea. It's like they will do what they need to do
That's what makes superhero movies in general, like the real thoughtful superhero movies, if they embrace that idea of, you know, being a superhero is awesome and it's badass, but at the same time, it's an inherently very violent, destructive life. And heroes, if the heroes are powerful, the villains need to be
kind of like
powerful.
That suit, Andrew, that shade.
Yeah.
That's a three piece.
The pinstripe?
I don't know about pinstripe.
It's got a little pinstripe in it.
I don't know about pinstripe, but
that's a dark charcoal suit.
Yeah.
I like that.
It's definitely got pinstripe.
I love this room. What the hell is this room?
Yeah, what is this room?
It's just a bunker, man.
it's a stage that they built.
It is legitimately a bat cave.
I mean, we're about to watch the greatest scene in this film. What can we say about the scene leading up to the greatest film and the greatest scene in this film? Is it this movie that says
people,
that things
fear
are,
making
things
people
are
irrational?
Oh yeah, he just said it. Like, things are darkest just before the dawn, and I think that's something that we got to remember in these troubling times in the United States and the world. You know, it's like things are kind of rough right now, but we gotta stay hopeful and we gotta like stick to it and. You know,
giving up isn't an option, and
giving into fear is not the option. You know, you gotta stay true.
He was ready.
Yep.
Bruce Wayne was ready. He couldn't see another way out.
He's a smart dude.
Yep. Did you guys make a life out of being in service? Like, you fill your days with polishing silverware and making sure that the meals are planned and that the house is
running
and stuff like that.
Well, no way. I mean, this is just this is a different kind of lifestyle. I mean, there's
commitment and dedication. So.
Right.
But you guys have watched Downton Abbey, right? What do you think about Downton Abbey?
I mean, but like those people, they don't have to do it, but they enjoy taking care of people. They enjoy taking care and elevating themselves to a stature of royalty. Like this is, I mean, Bruce Wayne is the 1%. So he lives a different kind of life.
He is absolutely a 1%er.
So he lives a different kind of life, you know, and Alfred makes sure that his house runs smoothly. Things are taken care of.
Well, you couldn't do what Alfred does unless you just absolutely loved Bruce. You have to love him completely.
Well, he's been his butler since he was a child. You know, before he was a child.
Added coin.
It's a nice little reveal.
Yep,
that's
really
that
good.
He's
and he shares it with her. That's a poignant moment.
Yep. Well, and then he gives it to her, and then you find out what happens to the coin later. It's great. It's a great script.
One of the greatest set pieces of all movie history.
Yeah. So this is IMAX 2. This thing is shot. Little trivia about this scene. One of four IMAX cameras that existed in the world at the time was damaged in the film.
No shit?
Yes.
Wow. Wow.
Yes. And IMAX cameras shoot in 70mm plus film stock, and that's why it looks incredible. And they all weigh a ton. You cannot handheld them. They are heavy as hell.
Well, isn't that part of the reason why they're not used more in feature films? Is A, because they're huge.
Yeah.
They use enormous film magazines. And they're loud. Apparently, because the film runs so fast that the camera's loud.
No, I was unaware of that. That's cool. Makes sense. Apparently, I was reading the trivia before. This isn't like, I didn't write this one down, but apparently citizens saw this action scene being filmed at Chicago Nights, and multiple times the police were called for the Batmobile going down the streets.
That's awesome. Slaughter is the best medicine. I hate puns, but that's a good one. Listeners, we may not talk much during this sequence. It's
incredible. Just soak it in. You know, it's
RPG.
Yep.
Jesus Christ!
I was
I was playing some COD multiplayer the other day, and there was a guy running around with an RPG loadout. I hate RPGs in COD.
In Halo 3, we used to call them noob tubes.
Mm-hmm. The guy with running around with a rocket launcher.
Here we go.
Best Batmobile? Question mark?
Best Batmobile by far.
I don't know about that.
What's better? Tell us what's better, Christopher.
I think I'm partial to the Batmobile in the Batman animated series.
Ooh,
yeah, I can see that.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good too. Very long, sleek looking.
Yep.
I regret they came out when this movie came out. They came out with a Lego set of the Tumbler, and it was limited edition. And we saw it at San Diego Comic Con. It was one of the years that we were going. I can't remember which. I saw a Lego. I held it in my hand, the Batman Tumbler set, and it was $50. And I didn't buy it.
That would have been dope.
I regret it. I regret it to this day.
Yeah,
I regret not just pulling the trigger on that. Should have bought it, and I haven't seen it. It was limited edition, so they did. They was like, ugh.
This one right here.
That would be an epic collector's item now.
Right.
This one, one of the many moments in this sequence where one of the showings I was in, the crowd cheered.
Which part?
It's coming up. Batman's escape. His ejection from the wrecked Tumbler.
Oh, a little trivia about the Batpod, what we're about to see. Christian Bale never wrote it. In fact, there was only one stunt driver that was able to not crash it constantly.
Wow.
So only one stuntman was able to ever be in it, ever.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's very, very cumbersome, apparently.
Yeah, look at how that thing would be impossible to... Right.
That's the part where it's like, okay, Batman's tech is awesome and Batman really can figure anything out.
Those wide tires, would be really difficult.
It doesn't really, like, for what looking at it, you're like, how does this actually work? Because it doesn't look like it should work.
It's very difficult to steer, apparently.
Apparently the Tumbler that they built from scratch for the first movie and that gets blown up in that scene, I mean, was incredibly fun to drive. Like, stunt people loved driving it.
A bit.
And it only had a top speed of like 70 or 80 miles an hour, but it handled great, apparently.
Well, probably because it weighed a ton. Do helicopters in Chicago fly that low?
Very rarely.
Yeah, it's probably pretty dangerous, hence why it crashes.
Very dangerous to fly in between tall buildings like that. So only if they're responding to a real emergency, and even then it's probably rare.
Like a rolling vehicular battle with bazookas and machine guns?
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
This truck flip coming up, they did it once, and, awesome.
Yep, moment. I love it.
They did it once, and, they recorded, they had 7 cameras on the flip, because they could only do it once. So, all the angles you're about to see, yep.
Is it the greatest practical effect in all of movies?
Maybe.
Jesus.
Only done once. One take.
Completely done in camera.
Mm-hmm.
Practical effect. Crazy. Why do you think he's saying I want you to do it?
Because he'll have won. If he can force Batman to kill him, then he knows he's won. And that's all he wants. He wants to push people to commit, like, anarchy, to ruin Batman. If Batman kills somebody, then he is immediately... He's a criminal. He's a murderer.
one line that Batman won't cross. And if he can push him over that line, he really will have won.
Look at that look. God, so good. No backstory.
I love that idea that his clothes are custom.
Custom, and, yeah.
Yeah, they can't even trace where he bought it or anything.
Yeah, he's just
he's blank.
He's thought through everything.
Completely improvised moment from Heath Ledger. Him giving Gordon the round of applause.
That was improvised?
Yep, he improvised that.
Wow.
Also a disconcerting image to have the Joker as kind of very calm and still.
Yeah.
And kind of be surrounded by like the agitated prisoners. Like he's in control of the moment.
I like this relationship that they establish with the little boy that comes up later. You know, it's really subtle, but they introduce the character and he's there and he likes Batman. He's like a fan commissioner. And it's really like the only other character that knows that Batman at the end of the movie is not bad is the little boy.
Yep.
Crazy. It should have been a little girl, though, because then it would have been,
yep.
It should have been.
Should have been a little girl.
Batgirl in the next movie.
Commissioner Gordon. Lighting. Look how he's lit. Incredible. It's like that black behind him goes on forever.
Well, there's a reason for that.
Oh, I know there's a reason for it, but it's just.
But no one knew the reason before.
It's just the art of it is incredible. Like, the black goes on forever.
The trivia says that Heath Ledger wanted Christian Bale to punch him for real in this scene, and he did. So that's, think about that as Heath Ledger and Christian Bale are
commitment.
Talking.
That's a commitment.
Yeah.
This scene going off. At the scene, you see Batman using all of his ability, all of his capabilities, the fear, the punishing kind of violence, and the Joker never gives in. He is in absolute control of this scene the whole time.
I love that. It's so brilliant. It, like, he doesn't want to kill
him. This is the central philosophical exchange of the whole thing.
Yes, yes. There's so, I mean, we're spending 2.5 hours just talking about how amazing this movie is because it is amazing. This changed superhero film. This is just a good film. Not necessarily, yep. Not even like
a
good
film.
Superhero film. It's
great
it's,
film.
It's a great film, and
because of the performances, movie, yeah, yes. It's because of the performances and the writing,
and the writing and the director understanding the characters, understanding who well, they not are, being
not being afraid to reach for really big ideas in a superhero film. Yep, look at this, the violence, the fear, the intimidation, and he never gives in. He tells him only what he wants him to know.
The only sensible way to live in this world is without rules.
The Joker's theme, that underlying tone.
With Batman doing the violence.
Yep.
That's the brilliance of the scene.
Yep.
Is that through line of that tone. This is Batman doing the violence.
Well, he's pushing him. He's pushing him to do it, and there's nothing he can do about it.
Again, the central Joker point is that human beings always have a choice. Such a brilliant film. It's such a brilliant film. I love it for its just commentary. Let alone that it's a kick-ass superhero movie, the commentary and examination of all these issues is just, I just love every part of it. And it's hopeful.
Yep.
At ultimate end, it's hopeful. It's sacrifice and hope.
That is some. That's actually a through line with a lot of Nolan's movies. He's a very hopeful director.
Yep.
Mm.
Hope and love exist in a lot of his films.
They're hope and love that are intermixed with like trauma and violent people and hostility and overcoming those things is what Christopher Nolan is all about. Love. Love and hope overcome adversity.
I mean, Eckhart is great in this movie, but he never really, like, had another kind of movie where, you know, he was at the top like this again. I mean, this was the biggest movie of this particular year.
Who?
It was University. Yeah, it was universally acclaimed. He really didn't have, you know, another movie that felt as big as this. You know?
You know, I really liked him in Thank You for Smoking, but if you want to watch a movie that's really bad, you can watch The Core.
Oh, God.
Or Midway. Midway.
Midway's not bad. Midway's not bad.
That's a movie, right? That came out this year?
It's on HBO Max right now. It's not very good. It's worth a watch.
It's not very good.
I never saw it, yeah.
It's a mindless kind of World War II
action movie. Battle Los Angeles? Awful.
I like Battle Los Angeles.
Pretty good. That movie's good.
No, Battle Los Angeles is garbage.
It is so dumb and simple, but it just it doesn't try to be anything more than it is. It's just a straightforward war movie.
I only saw that the once in the theater and I hated it, and I can't even make like a good argument about why I hated it because I tried to push every memory of that movie out of my brain as fast as I could.
Wow. So we're getting the Joker's scheme. He had a scheme. He wanted to be captured, or he was prepared to be captured. The criminal mastermind, yet again.
The era of tiny cell phones.
Right.
Well, you don't, I mean, these cell phones couldn't, you know, you didn't have your whole life on your cell phone back then. It made calls and it sent text messages. And it, you know, it could take pictures. And not very good ones.
Oh, yeah. A phone like that took terrible photos.
I was right around this time probably where I had my first camera phone. It was a flip phone.
Oh my God. You had a Razor?
Oh, I had a Razor for sure. I had a Razor for years. I loved my Razor. Razors are great. We thought he was going to save her.
He thought.
We thought it'd be this triumphant moment.
Oh, it's just unbelievably tragic.
Mm-hmm.
And so real and visceral. Mm. God.
Yep.
Joker, come here to be caught. Gordon gets it.
That shot.
That shot's crazy. He's trying
in
for the
back
seat.
He's
in the back seat.
Hanging his head out the window. See, this shot, well, when we come back to it, that's why this strikes me as a movie. This is an image of terrorism. This is like a common idea. This is a common idea in our brain of what terrorism looks like. A blown up building with firefighters.
How do you react to Alfred's choice here to keep this hidden from Bruce?
I understand it.
Yeah.
Because
it would just like wreck Bruce.
Bruce is at his lowest point, and if he knew in that lowest moment that he could have been with her, he may not have been able to come back.
He's trying to protect Bruce from this.
I mean, he's as defeated as he's ever been.
No, and but that letter says that she's not going to go with him. So he perpetuates a delusion of Bruce's.
Yeah.
Because Bruce thinks that she chose him.
That's what he needs in that moment to keep going.
Here's the decision he makes right here.
Yep. Makes the decision for the greater good.
Yeah.
Because
so he Bruce, can continue to be Batman.
Bruce may have been ready to give up. Well, they established that at the end of Batman Begins, when Batman, you know, when the Gotham doesn't need Batman anymore, the two of them will be together. Like, that was a central...
Yep.
That was his kind of... Bruce Wayne's central kind of hope is that, you know what, maybe I could have something after being Batman. There is
life. Yeah.
Another life that I could have when I win or when I'm victorious. And it would be with her.
When they finally show his face, it's I mean, I love that they like hold off for a while.
It was shocking. It was shocking.
So, and it looked, I remember it looking great. I mean, this is 12 years ago, and yep. CGI has come a long way. So I'm a little worried this is going to look like trash, but I remember it looking great.
Oh, he rips it off. Oh.
Ugh.
How long has it been since you've watched this movie all the way through?
It's been a long time.
Years?
Yeah, a couple years at least.
Yeah.
Years.
I think I watched it last year once.
Oh, really?
It's been at least 5 years for me.
Wow.
At least a couple.
There was a span of time where it was on TNT, like constantly, or TNT or TBS, I would watch like snippets of it here or there when I had cable.
Here's a shot. He turns his head.
Yep.
I always thought the comic book Two-Face was always kind of like, obviously, he was deformed, but obviously, he was kind of like, he's a caricature, you know, he was like silly. And this Two-Face is so, like, disturbed and tragic and just dark. And, I mean, it's weird. Yeah.
They don't show it there. I forgot that they don't show it there.
They don't show it.
I think you see the end of the scene.
It's an interesting directorial choice. You see Gordon's reaction.
Oh, yeah. There it is.
Yep, there it is. Look at his jawbone. Jesus. That's just
I mean, that looks
horrific.
Pretty good.
That looks pretty awesome.
Good. Yep.
Yeah.
And awful.
Yep.
Yeah.
This, for me, this version of Two-Face really feels informed by the version of Two-Face that was on the Batman the Animated Series.
Well, I was just going to say, when the Batman Animated Series looks so cartoony, it's like green, he's got
I think that, but the character, how they make, like, the way they make it so
the
tragic.
Anger.
Yeah.
The anger in him. It's not a, like, not Tommy Lee Jones, like, whack job. No, yeah. that had to hurt, by the way.
Much so.
That had to hurt.
Yeah.
That was a good throw, too. He binged him in the head.
Yep.
How much money do you think that is? Those are $100 bills.
Yeah.
It's gotta be.
The internet has got to have done an estimate.
Sure.
Okay. I'm gonna look it up.
Yeah. Keep Dark Knight Pyramid of Money. Total.
Yeah. Pyramid of Money.
Okay, $100 million pallet is 92,000 cubic inches. The estimated Joker's cash is 5.832 million cubic inches. So the estimation is $6.3 billion.
I love the internet.
The hive mind, man, will try to solve it.
Absolutely. That's fun.
That sounds totally legit.
It does.
Billions of dollars he just burns.
Yep.
And it's done by like the size of a pallet.
Yeah.
$100 million pallet. And then how,
like in Brewster's Millions, like in Brewster's Millions,
Yeah.
There were three pallets. He had like 300 million, right?
He had $3 million
in a month.
And then he got $30 million
And then he would get 300 if he succeeded.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's it. So it was each pallet was 10 million.
Yep.
In that movie. Right. There were three pallets. Is that right? I might not be remembering right. But.
That movie was fun.
That movie's fun. Old John Candy.
The Lamborghini. Look at this thing.
This is the Lamborghini.
Reventon, I think.
Whatever it stands for, it's the bat.
Yeah.
I know. I can't remember.
Oh, no shit. Really?
The Dark Knight Lamborghini.
Yeah, the name of the it's the Italian word for bat.
Lamborghini is a luxury automobile, Bruce Wayne. He drives a Murcielago.
Murcielago.
Which means bat in Spanish.
Spanish. Thank you. Yeah. This is a dope ass car.
Oh yeah.
If you had all the money in the world, would you buy a Ferrari, a Lamborghini, a Porsche? What would you get?
Porsche. I'd get a Porsche.
You get a really dope-ass Porsche?
Yep.
A 911 Turbo, right?
I think I'd go
GT2 or GT3.
I wouldn't want like a modern like sports car like that. I go old and like rare.
No, I would get a modern No way.
I might actually get a Porsche 918, the Spyder, the electric one.
Ooh.
I think that would be fun to own one of those.
I'd get a 911 Turbo, I think.
Oh, yeah.
I think I'd buy a Tesla.
Or a GT. I'd probably get both, a 911 Turbo for my commuter, and then a GT2 or 3 to run at the track.
The GT2 and 3 are track cars.
As long as we're dreaming.
Right. All the money in the world, right?
All the money in the world. You know, you're Bruce Wayne. What car do you drive? Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah.
So you see, after this movie came out, obviously you'll see cosplays at cons.
Yes.
I saw it. Oh, I've seen it too. The Joker nurse cosplay is one
Joker
that I...
nurse. It's hilarious.
It's hilarious. I love it. I love to see it at conventions.
It's like this deep cut.
It's a deep cut. Yep.
Deep cut. Like.
I love it.
long did he go without washing his hair to get that grease? Ugh.
Something in it. Like, there's so much.
You gotta know. Come on, because how in character Heath got, I'm sure he didn't wash his hair for two weeks.
Yeah, but there's still makeup artists. There's still I mean, he would smell terrible if you did that.
Most likely.
They can put stuff in your hair to make it look like that. They can put stuff in your hair to make it look wet and greasy and gross.
True.
So
look at the residue on the pillow. That's like, commitment to detail.
Yep.
It's like the.
Of course he would bleed. Of course he would bleed onto his pillow.
Bleed that onto his pillow. Burnt pieces and blood from his.
Well, he's probably like, because he has no face, he's probably like tearing and ripping. Like tissue, you know.
That's why
his muscles
restrained
are exposed.
His arms, so he can't touch it.
Oh, that's so. I mean, just the thought of that is rough.
We've just totally glossed over this whole sequence where he put the word out that he threatened all the hospitals, and this is a guy whose wife is in the hospital.
Well, and then we're talking over the whole. Joker convincing Harvey Dent to not kill him.
Yep.
He convinces him.
Well, no, Harvey flips for it.
Well, yeah, but he convinces him to not just like fight him right here. It's like, This is something that I will never forget from any movie is if the news is about gangbangers dying, no one cares. Or soldiers. But then little kids and schools. Yeah. It's this interest, and it took this film for me to like realize my own bias. It's like it's inherent in our psyche.
You're
like,
numb to it, bro. It's not a bias. Yes. You're just numb to the tragedy.
Yes. The thing. No, you're numb to the things that make sense. It's like oh, soldiers get killed, or like you read the number of COVID deaths, and you're just like, oh god. Like, but every little tick is a person. You know, every little tick. Every little number that goes up is one more grandfather, one more mother, one more sister, one more, it's just like, fuck, dude.
Yep.
And the number has become so astronomical that we're becoming like just normal everyday shit.
I don't know who said it, but it's a little trite and it's a tiny bit of a cliche, but it's true. One death is a tragedy. 100,000 deaths is a statistic. Somebody said that, and it's true. You can instantly connect with one death more than you can 100,000. 100,000 is way too big of a number. It. Yeah, you can't get your mind around it. Or Lamborghini.
So, this was a screw up too. The pyrotechnics didn't go off as planned. They had one shot to do this, blow up this hospital.
It was like an abandoned hospital or something, right?
Yeah, and it stops here, and he's supposed to get on the bus, and the cameraman. This is something that you have to like realize too: is the cameraman stayed with it too. He didn't go. He didn't stop rolling. He watched him.
Well, he stays in character.
Yeah. And then, boom. Then they get in, and the hospital.
Surprised by it.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It really is. IMAX. mounts it on a camera or mounts it on a helicopter.
Yeah. You have to like, they're so big, you have to mount them on either a car rig or a helicopter. Like, they're just so effing heavy. Like, a tripod can't hold it up.
Wow.
Yeah. You could probably put it on a dolly, but I mean, damn, it would be tough to balance that sucker. Because dollies weigh a ton.
Yeah.
So this is a very interesting concept too. It's about taking people's freedoms away to protect people.
Yep.
Well, you know, compromising their privacy.
Right.
That goes back to your terrorism point, Andrew.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's
absolutely.
The United States did things exactly like this.
Patriot Act. Yep.
They surveilled people that they had that were not suspicious, that they were literally, it was just gathering data. Searching for data. They weren't targeting anybody that they suspected of a crime. They were just gathering data to try to find criminals.
Yeah, casting a wide net.
Yep.
What's that? Did you ever watch that movie Scanner Darkly?
No.
With the
Jesus, Keanu look
Reeves.
At that.
It's like animated Keanu Reeves.
Never seen it.
Well, it's based on a science fiction novel by the same thing, but it's like half of society does a job for the government that watches the other half of society, basically, and it's like you observe everything that they see and experience in a way to control them, in a way to like follow criminals and understand like what the society is up to. And because of that, like half the society is turned to drugs and crime and being criminals because like they're, as long as they don't try to overthrow the government or like change the status quo, you're allowed to do whatever you want. And it's this weird thing about like people who are being watched who are also being watched, like people who are watching who are also being watched. It's this crazy like snake eating its tail thing of where do you stop? Where do you draw the line of watching somebody and control? And it's a really interesting movie, but it's done. It's kind of a mind trip because of how it's made. But I like the concepts. And it goes along with this. We got all those.
Batman gives control of this thing to the most righteous man he knows.
Yep.
And we accept it as the audience because we know
and
that
Lucius Fox being like neutral good. He's able to bend the laws.
Yeah, a little hide bit. Things. Yep.
Yeah, but for the right reasons.
Yep. But he is. I mean, Gordon.
Or true good. He can be true good. True good characters are kind of boring, but I mean they will do what's right. Yeah, he kind of lies and bends the rules a little bit, so.
I mean, every character in these movies compromises in some way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's brilliant.
like the idea of a realistic take on Two-Face. He would burn out quickly. I don't know, the scars and kind of the madness that he lives in. It's not like something that would last long.
Yeah, he can't. He's not a big like planner guy. Like they make him out to be kind of this like criminal.
He just
boss.
Gives up on control, right? He just totally gives up, and everything is put to chance. Random. Everything is random.
Yep. When we get to the scene, Christopher, you're going to have to explain the game theory aspects of the choice the Joker poses.
It's such an amazing thing.
Yeah, you're going to have to explain it to us.
So, since you're bringing it up, when I first saw this film, and the guy who makes the choice later to throw the thing into the water, I didn't see that coming. I'm an experienced enough, I'll pat myself on the back a little bit, is like I'm an experienced enough film watcher that most of the time I could see where the story beats are headed and what they're going to do to get out of this situation. And I didn't see that coming. I had no idea that guy right there is going to throw the control mechanism out the window. Crazy. Brilliant filmmaking.
Prisoner's Dilemma. It's in game theory, it's Prisoner's Dilemma. Each prisoner is confronted with a choice about providing information or shutting up, right? And not sharing information. And everybody, it examines, it's an economic theory about everybody acts in their own self-interest. And in the moments of acting in your own self-interest, the examination and Prisoner's Dilemma is about what is the rational choice for each prisoner to make in terms of sharing information. If they become the informant, they get off and the other prisoner goes to prison for 10 years. If they both stay silent, they both go to prison, or they both go free. If they both rat, I think the way it goes is they both go to prison for 5 years, something along those lines. And the rational choice for each one is to rat the other one out, right? That's the initial rational choice for each one as they're thinking about it is that when they're prevented with the offer, they should rat the other one out. They should be the informant because that gets them off. But if they both do that, it's against their interests. They're collectively. And so this scenario pits a similar sort of question in terms of choice. In each boat's rational sort of perspective, in their rational interest, they throw the switch.
But then they're forced to kill
it. And it is not in their interest to not throw the switch. That's the unbelievable, interesting sort of philosophical take of all of this, is that this guy articulates it. It is in their interest to throw the switch.
To them, expecting that they'll kill each other.
Exactly. They will both, because the rational choice for each, the initial sort of surface level rational choice for each, is for them to each throw the switch, which kills everybody.
Well, here's the thing too, is like,
or kills one boat ahead of the other, right? You kill one boat, that eliminates the switch.
Well,
but again,
there's a no-win scenario to this thing also, is if I rat that person out, that I don't go to jail. They don't die. If I flick the switch, we live. If they flick the switch, we die, they live.
Yeah.
You know, and it's sort of like they're thinking and that they'll get blown up.
Again, it's the ultimate examination of choice by the human beings, right?
Yes, you want to
survive. The Joker doesn't think that people will make inherently good choices, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So the Joker, his central premise is that the people on the good ship will kill the prisoners. Or the prisoners being bad will kill everybody else.
Yep.
He thinks that in the state of nature, right? Leviathan is the state of nature, right? Is that people are savages. And they will not exercise moral judgment.
And I love that the civilized boat takes a second to vote.
Yeah.
An anonymous vote.
We get this, you know, amazing superhero moment where Batman takes on like 10 guys. And he's got cool tech, and he's a badass.
Yeah.
Batman's eyes always appear white in comics and in cartoons.
The beauty of applying the prisoner dilemma to this scenario on the boats is that it speaks to the ultimate sort of economic conclusion from the prisoner's dilemma and game theory terms is that people have a bias toward the collective and cooperative that is often against their individual rational interest. They will assume and trust that the other side is going to be good. And so in the vacuum of the rational choice for the individual, they should absolutely immediately flip the switch.
Yeah.
But human beings collectively have this bias toward other people are going to be good and make the right choice.
Yeah.
And that's what it speaks to, is this fascinating sort of insight into human choice. People don't always make choices that are completely grounded in their own rational self-interest. They just don't. They make decisions based upon collective interest, based upon an assumption, inherent or otherwise, that other people are going to make good choices too about the collective good. And this is the affront to, this is why it's so smart and genius to include this in this movie about the Joker, is it completely refutes the Joker's worldview. That's why I love it as much as I do, because it absolutely refutes Joker. The Joker and his anarchy.
Yeah, Batman and Joker, that's why they're such... Them opposing each other is such a strong dynamic. It's because they're completely opposing worldviews.
Yep. Yep.
Completely opposing. That's, I mean,
and the beauty of this is also that it's totally out of Batman's hands.
Yep.
I mean, he cannot save the people on the boat.
Well, I mean, Batman exists in a society where, like, people have to allow him to exist. You know, if the cops were constantly hunting him down, but they allow him to exist because Gotham needs Batman to help them control order. Like, he's beyond, he's doing something they can't. And if society, like, he's trying to break down society where the society rejects Batman, and that's sort of like the Joker's like, you know, big thing is like, you aren't inspiring
hope. Scariest looking dude.
Yeah, scariest looking dude
in the room.
This guy is the guy that if you see him on the prison yard on your first day, yeah,
you make friends with him.
Either you knock him knock his ass out, or you make friends with him.
Do not fight that guy, Andrew. You make friends with
him. Well, that's the joke about prison. It's like, if you ever go to prison, find the biggest guy in the yard and you knock him down on the first day.
Oh, God. Then you get shanked. You're going to get shanked in prison, Andrew.
Nah, man. Establish dominance.
You keep your head down and you make friends.
I'm never going to prison, dude. Never going to commit a crime. I have a terror. I have a ridiculous fear of prison.
I get it. You might go to prison for being a vigilante, though, you know.
True.
That dude is a coward. You throw that switch, you kill hundreds of people.
Yeah, and you have to live with that your entire life.
Yep. Not going to do it.
Can you live with being a murderer?
We missed we sort of talked over the vote. The vote of the crowd was to throw the switch, right?
Throw the switch. But by like just a little margin.
Yeah, right.
I'm sure that they
there was a timetable.
Yep, is to not they
do it by midnight.
Understand that they neither of them should throw the switch.
Yep.
Love it. He's laughing.
He thought he'd won. He'd gotten to Batman enough that Batman was gonna murder him. That would have been a victory for him as well. wonder if Ledger really hung upside down for this scene.
Yeah.
He had to have, right?
Yeah.
It's terrible hanging upside down. It is completely unpleasant, and eventually you pass out.
The Batman voice. We couldn't.
Pretty extreme in this scene.
Yeah.
Well, he's fighting through the pain. He's wounded.
Yep.
Really terrifying is that the Joker makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
You find yourself, you know,
that's what makes him
agreeing with him.
He has nuggets of truth in the shit he says. No question.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
See, this is my only gripe with this film, is that this should be a little girl, because this would be Barbara Gordon.
Yep.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I think if there's anything that could have been a little bit more of a nod to the comics, and then, making it Barbara Gordon rather than his son.
Yeah, making a Barbara Gordon who he has the speech with at the end, and the music in this scene is so incredible, too. Like, I mean, we're talking a lot, but, like, Hans Zimmer. Like, is Hans Zimmer just killing it.
The first time or two we saw this, somebody said it, and it's totally true. You get to the point where you're like, this kid's gonna die. Like, yep. you're at the precipice, but like, oh my god, he's gonna kill this kid. Gonna happen in this movie.
Yeah.
They're not going to be able to save him. You feel that fear.
There is a daughter there.
There is a daughter.
But she should have been at the centerpiece of the...
Yeah, she should have been the centerpiece.
Well, it's just the moment... The moment he has with him at the end of the movie, because the little boy is the only one that knows that that Batman is actually a hero.
Yeah.
And that would have turned into Barbara Gordon. They could have even done Barbara Gordon in the next movie. That boy is probably 10-ish, 12-ish. And then Barbara Gordon could have been 20 in the next one, because it takes the next one takes place 8 years later.
Yep. Talked at all about Gary Oldman as Commissioner Gordon, but he really is incredible.
He's such a good actor.
He gives such a subtle performance. You expect Gary Oldman to kind of be over the top, because he is in a lot of his roles. He's very kind of energetic and expressive, and he is very reserved.
Isn't
it very natural performance from him?
Isn't J.K. Simmons Commissioner Gordon in Batman v Superman?
He is.
He's only in like one or two scenes.
Yeah, he doesn't have a very large role.
Shoots him.
The scene builds to the point where you're like, yep, this kid's gonna die. That's just effective filmmaking, man.
Jesus.
Yep.
Lie. So intense.
Another hero moment.
Hope and sacrifice.
Yeah, man. And sacrificing really everything.
Yep.
For the greater good.
I just keep like sitting here and watching it because it's so beautiful too. Shot beautifully.
Yep.
And all these things, all these elements are really interesting. Like, God, the dark part of his face is facing up so that he has this moment where Batman goes over and turns his face to the light side. Like, it's just, this is like next level.
Every detail that signals something.
Yes.
The Joker cannot win. So Batman makes the choice. Yep. Alfred burning the note.
Yep, should have been Barbara.
Right?
I mean, on a kind of progressive level, it would have been nice just to have a more of a female representation in the movie.
No question. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean
Rachel
I think
Dawes is central to it, but
oh no, I mean she's a great character too. But
well,
I think I watched this movie enough where I had this like speech that he makes at the end memorized.
Oh wow.
Iconic shot.
Boom. So iconic.
Credits. Man. Yeah,
incredible.
Christopher Nolan, thank you. Oh my God.
Seriously. Amazing.
For my money, the best superhero movie ever.
I mean, I still, there's a
no
few
question.
that come close or are fun, but this is
I think Logan comes close.
Really?
Logan is close to this.
Yeah, in terms of quality of performances, in terms of ideas that it
for me, I agree.
Yeah, I think Logan comes close, and I think Civil War comes close in terms of what the MCU, the limitations of what the MCU is. I think Winter Soldier comes close.
Winter Soldier, no, I think you're right. Winter Soldier is the better combination of action and character study, but it's not as deep in character study.
Nope. And I think that because that's part of the constraints of the MCU, but has Nolan made Inception might be Nolan's best movie, but I can't think of a better movie that Nolan's made than this movie.
Yeah.
Has he made a better movie?
This is probably my favorite Christopher Nolan movie. Like, I really liked Interstellar. I like Inception, obviously. It's amazing.
Dunkirk's incredible.
Incredible
feat of filmmaking.
Yes.
Yep.
They should teach that movie in film school.
I think this is his best. I think this is his best.
This is his best movie.
Well, the subject matter definitely speaks to us.
Yeah.
In multi.
Yeah. We are the Brothers Geek. This is the geekiest movie he's made. But
by far.
I mean, we got to continue this with
Interstellar's pretty geeky, but
it really is.
Yeah. The Dark Knight Rises will be our next watch along, obviously.
Yep.
Thank you for listening, dear listener. You should follow us on Twitter, brothers_geek. Email the podcast, brothersgeekpodcast. If you have ideas for watch alongs or you want to write about something,
suggestion of a movie you want us to watch that we can.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe, you know, rip on because it's just so terrible that you want to force us to watch it. We'll consider that.
We'll consider that.
Yep.
What other things do I need to plug?
Brothers Geek Twitter, brothers_geek, Brothers Geek stuff podcast. On Instagram.
All the things. Yeah.
That's right. That's
follow
right.
us on our socials.
Brothers Geek.
Episode will return soon.
Definitely.
Thanks for being fans and listening. And geeking out with us.
Yep. Be a hero, wear a mask.
Be a hero, wear a mask.